Thank you, sir. And yes, it seems like only yesterday, but different venue, so that's good. Now, sir, I think all of our material's been pre-filed. Mr. Brown does have a summary statement to hand up at that time. Mr. Yeo's evidence in chief was 2.5 pages, so he hasn't done a summary, and he may just provide some comments on that and then receive questions. So I need propose to speak to my submissions on a few key points, if that's acceptable, sir.
Yes, just to present to you.
And so, I move firstly to section 3 with our complaint about the adequacy or inadequacy of information in the section 32 assessment being a matter Mr. Brown picks up in evidence. And at paragraph 3.2, and forgive us if things have moved on and there is more clarity because we know how the hearing process goes, but specifically we've said it's unclear what the level and nature of further development Skyline proposes to pursue in the Ben Lomond Reserve. And for example, we've got commercial as an activity type across the site, and that's a very broad definition for an adjoining user. There's some concern about the extent of what's proposed. What level of increased patronage and built development the zone might deliver, and in particular, there's the issue of vehicle movements, traffic, and how that is going to be managed in the absence of any traffic evidence, at least from the proponent of the zone. The councils, of course, produce their traffic analysis. What effects the development is expected to have on the reserve and other users of the reserve. Now, Mr. Yeo's view on this is that already it's a very busy area, and he's not saying that nothing further should occur, but what he is saying, Mr. Brown agrees with it, and is that there needs to be a careful look, because there's already a lot happening up there at peak times, a lot of movement of people to make sure that the amenity values that are in the reserve management plan are preserved, that activities are integrated, that people are safe. And finally, just how these effects are avoided, remedied or mitigated. I won't read 3.3, but I will turn to traffic, network and parking. And the principal submission there is that traffic effects have not been adequately assessed or addressed. And I don't know if there's anything further on that. Right, so that position. I won't take you through these paragraphs, sir, 3.5 to 3.9, but the bottom line is, as I've just mentioned, you don't have, in my submission, the type of analysis you would expect in an upzoning in terms of traffic generation or traffic effects. Now, I've fairly acknowledged in these submissions that not for Skyline to remedy the traffic or transportation issues for the district or even the CBD, but it needs to think about what it might be doing in terms of car parking and turn its mind to that. What might be the type of, what may be the extra amount of traffic generated? It should be thinking about those things in my submission, sir, and you should have evidence on it from the proponent. At 3.9, I've just commented on Ms. Banks' evidence for the.
Can I interrupt?
Yes, of course.
May I interrupt you, Mr. Young?
Yes, of course.
At 3.8, before you go on to 3.9,
yes.
The header sentence, the subzone appears to go further than the consent application in terms of scale and the development that it enables. I did ask the question this morning of Mr. Dent, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but my recollection is that he said that the actual buildings at the top are greater than what would be enabled by the provisions in the zone, but that the commercial activities which are enabled are, as you said earlier, quite open.
In addition,
so,
yes.
Yeah, so I wasn't quite sure where you got that statement from and if we're all talking on the same thing.
That's just my own knowledge. I don't know that the resource consent that's been sought enables buildings of a greater size than the zone anticipates. I haven't done that analysis of that.
Mr. Dean explained that the height of buildings in the consent application were something like 26 metres,
yes.
Whereas in the rules that he is suggesting would be permitted would be up to 10 metres and beyond that discretionary.
So it'd be a discretionary consent, and I would have expected the resource consent itself, if I'm correct, Mr. Brown, if I didn't correct me, was a non-compliant activity in total. And I think the height infringements, even in rural zones, were similar discretionary and non-compliant.
Mm-hmm.
So, broadly speaking, in terms of the analysis, same, similar regime. But I take the point, my point is, as you've identified, Commissioner Crawford, you've now got these quite large areas of land, 16,000 square metres and 8,000 square metres, as I understand, these additional areas of land where you can have commercial activity, as a permitted activity. There's obviously the objectives and policies guiding how you might go about that, there's standards. We're not 100% clear on whether all of the rural standards apply or just those that are listed under the zone. And the only other matter I've tried to pin down, I'm not 100% sure on, is that if this zone isn't ONL, or is to be treated within an ONL but exempt like a ski area subzone, do the rural landscape criteria kick in as well? And if not, what is managing? What is there dealing with the landscape issues? You may know, we haven't been able to pin that down precisely. So
the evidence this morning was that it is within an ONL.
Right, that's helpful because we'd understood it, when you look at the policies, it talks about the amenity of the surrounding ONL. And I took that to read almost like a column in the middle that wasn't ONL, and when we develop there, we'll make sure we deal with the amenity of the adjoining ONL. But if it's still within the ONL, I would anticipate then that the rural landscape provisions that are in Mr. Dent's bundle must all kick in as well. But that's helpful too. But looking at the Snodgrass analysis, we thought that the proposal was to exclude it from the ONL, or at least if it's in the ONL, like the ski area subzones, have it as an exemption in terms of the activities and the assessment. So I'll just turn to 3.9, and as before, happy to take questions as I go through. That's fine, so jump in. at 3.9.
I just had to do that.
No, not at all. 3.9, Ms. Banks, I just want to emphasise that statement. Traffic effects from a commercial activity could potentially be significant depending on the scale and type, which is unknown. Now, I have to accept a zoning's not going to lock down outcomes. There is going to be some flexibility in some activity types, but what we've got here is a large area of land and some broad categories of activity type. In the absence of some traffic analysis, worst case scenario, it is concerning. And I think that absence, total absence from the proponent is bordering on a fatal flaw in terms of your ability. Well, it puts the panel in a very difficult position in terms of assessing effects and dealing with these matters. Now, I won't go through the Land Co decision because you'll be familiar with that. The Stonefields development, and that's the point where, as I say, there's a balance in all of this. They can't remedy the transport problems of Queenstown, but certainly they could tell you what they might contribute to it. At 3.11 to 3.13, I just noticed there that in the Land Co decision, that Stonefields development was seen to provide housing at a higher density, responding to an issue for the Auckland district, the Auckland region. Here we do have policies talking about national international tourism, but as I understand it, there isn't any economic evidence or evidence of that ilk talking about what this expanded zone and development within it might deliver in terms of economic benefits or benefits per se. So turning to the evidence before the panel, you just listed there the evidence that was known was received in terms of the consent application, obviously a more detailed application of the zoning, but in particular I would have thought that economic, traffic engineering and geology hazards, you're on a steep piece of land, that hazards would be another thing that would be addressed, and infrastructure, three waters and those sorts of things would be something you've received information on. We don't have that. I know that the council has produced evidence saying that they're comfortable and we don't have witnesses to dispute that, so I can't dispute that. Having said that, it would be for my submission, the proponent, Skyline, that should be producing that sort of information for you. In terms of costs and benefits, I don't think Mr. Dent has provided a cost-benefit analysis of the proposed subzone in the orthodox or the way I would consider a cost-benefit analysis should be undertaken. His assessment, his evidence is centred on the cost that Skyline has incurred in the resource consent application process. but does not assess benefits and costs for Queenstown and other users of Ben Lomond Reserve. Now, I accept that efficient consenting, clarity of provisions can be a cost and you can factor that in, but that's one of a number of costs and benefits, and of course, amenity, integration with adjoining landowners, traffic impacts, those are all potential costs, and we don't see that factored in the usual Section 32 way. And I have there mentioned that a common focus in Section 32 is the economic benefits, but it's much wider than that as well. Turning to Part 2, inconsistency with Part 2, the focus there is on amenity values because my client, Mr. Yeo, puts much stock in the reserve management plan. In talking to him just this morning, he was saying things like, being busier does not necessarily equal noisier, but it's the type of activities and how they're integrated, because the environment and the current amenity is very important to his business. So that's where we say that the reserves management plan is important to your consideration of amenity values. And just finally at paragraph at section 5, I just draw your attention to section 74.2b1a, which confirms from an RMA perspective that reserve management plan is something you should have regard to. Now, it's not determinative, but as Mr. Brown was saying as evidence, it would be nice if the district plan and the reserve management plan were harmonious and spoke to each other and there was some consistency. They do have different objectives or different statutory imperatives, but it is preferable, in fact my submission, it's desirable that there is consistency between the REMP as much as possible and the zoning.
Just on that, is a reserve management plan in any different position under the RMA than any other local government
document,
strategic plan?
No, I don't think it's more important or any less so because it comes under that same category of any other. So no, I wouldn't say any, but context is everything. And here when we're dealing with a zoning and a reserve, it must be particularly important because it's the plan that speaks of aspirations, outcomes for the reserve.
What about if it hasn't been reviewed for almost decades, but not quite?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't become an operative or invalid, but it might, from a realist, well, from a perspective,
well,
from a be seen outdated.
From a waiting point of view, does that affect it?
So from a waiting point of view, I would say it would only affect it if you received evidence that's from suitably qualified experts, planners, or recreational planners that said it was totally outdated and didn't represent the strategic planning aspirations of the council or the views of the community. And I don't. This RMP could probably be better, but in terms of being more comprehensive or up to date. But our experts don't think it's totally outdated. And I think it'd be a dangerous proposition if the council were to simply not review things that they slowly faded away. But equally, if it's not their most recent statement of their intention for the zone, and we understand stage two, there's zonings proposed for reserves. So I think you can factor its age in, sir. I don't think it's significant to the weight though. Mm. But I understand the question, I think it's a relevant consideration. Then that's entirely helpful, but the core values in the RMP we say are still valid. It's still, and there's no reason to think otherwise. I'm happy to try more, pushing more on that. If you have a tentative view about the value of it, it's good to know, perhaps too. So I sense its antiquity is a bit of a concern to you.
Well, to be honest, the Reserves Act itself and its management plan were designed to actually integrate with the Town and Country Planning Act 1977. And I just wonder whether, in reality, notwithstanding the provision in the RMA, whether that integration still holds up.
So certainly, I was still at college with the Town and Country Planning Act, so.
I understand. So I had to learn all about it.
Yes, no. But the values in terms of recreational use and amenity and enjoyment and identifying the types of use, whether it's historic values or for educational reasons, they still hold true. And certainly in resource management proceedings, they become relevant. Yes, I suppose we get to the point of, and it's probably a difficulty you've confronted a few times through this district plan review hearing, how far does the council go in terms of reviewing its plan in spatially or chapter-wise and management plans that feed into that? Our view here is that it should be looking at this area holistically and comprehensively, not in this ad hoc way. And so the reason I'm saying that is then concerns about integration with the reserve management plan could be resolved, or you could consider how you might integrate the plan with the RMP, or whether by doing a comprehensive evaluation of Bob's Peak, you say, right, we need to revisit the reserve management plan, something. But it needs to be integrated, and it's not at the moment. And it's all we've got from that perspective is the RMP. We don't have any other indications. We don't have even a statement of intent to review and to take it in a different direction. And so, but as I say, shall have regard to, sir, in terms of waiting, well, it's not determinative of genuine intention and thought. And if there was a case of inconsistency, which you felt was because the reserve management plan wasn't up to speed, then that might be a reason to place less weight on it.
Can I pop in there? Given that the reserve management plan's been around for a long time.
Sorry?
The reserve management plan's been around for a long time. The council's not proposing to review it. If you're in a position to submit it, doesn't it feel rather like a dead hand that's just sitting there and you can't do anything about it and you can't move forward?
I've used the phrase "dear hand" before, and look, no one. Yes, you could. You could look at it and say, "Look, it's out of date, and it needs to be updated, and therefore we don't put a lot of stock in it, and it doesn't reflect current community views of what's happening on the mountain, on Bob's Peak." I don't think it's a dead hand, though. I don't think the reserve management plan is so prohibitive as to not allow rezoning.
In fact, it specifically recognises
and it recognises recreation activities. So,
and it is, as we were told this morning, it's far, far bigger in its area than Bob's Peak.
That's right, and so that's an important part of this is from our perspective that we've got a corridor of zoning proposing to include the zip trek upper treehouse now, for example, but not the zip lines that go down the hills. So it's like having the top terminal building but no gondola in the zone. And that just, for me, starkly raises a question. We should be looking at this reserve area, or at least the area where commercial or recreation activities are occurring more broadly. Come back to your dead hand. No, I don't think it necessarily plays a dead hand, but submitters could be frustrated by the lack of review of the reserve management plan. I expect Mr. Yeo probably would say he would have liked to have seen the reserve management plan considered, reviewed 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and would have liked to be part of that process. But frustration with a document that you're required to statutorily consider, I think you have to assess the words of that document and decide whether it still provides useful guidance.
I understand that.
Yeah, yeah. And if it doesn't, it's outdated for any reason, because things have changed, things have moved on, because planning's fluid. That's a decision. I think that skyline or the council should just be upfront about that, though.
does the reserve, maybe it's a question to Mr. Brown, but does the reserve management plan resolve its own internal differences?
Well, it sort of provides for everything, for different things, that, well, for a number of things within the reserve, but it does, in that sense, in my view, leave the specific planning to a district plan document. So I think there's enough latitude in the reserve management plan to have a zone that's consistent with it. Mm. That's what I'm saying in terms of the dead hand. It's not prohibitive. You can read it and say, well, here it says there's one message that's different to another, but of course you often have different themes, and then you work out how to best give effect to each one of those or any of those in a given situation. So you could, it wouldn't seem to me to be impossible to have a rezoning that gives effect to the reserve management plan, but you'd need some certainty of outcome and a very careful evaluation of things such as amenity, because of, particularly for Ziptrek, the vegetation cover and the environment is pretty important to zip lining through and getting the experience they want their customers to have. Now, sir, just under that section 5, I do mention Mr. Brown addresses the reserve management plan, expresses a view similar to what I have of integration or a harmonious zone that works, and that's really the key part of his analysis. So in conclusion, the key point we make is, and we don't mean to be make it difficult for the panel, but we think there is an absence, a lack of information analysis to support a rezoning of this scale and significance. And based on the information available, it's our view that it doesn't promote sustainable management, or we don't know if it's the most significant, there's sufficient uncertainty as to whether it will achieve sustainable management. It has inconsistencies with the RMP, and it will not assist the QLDC in carrying out its functions to achieve the purpose of the RMA. And I think that's highlighted again, as I mean, I don't know whether you want to have a discussion. If the council, I don't know how much information you've received about the council's proposal to look at zoning reserves as part of stage two, and whether you consider that's relevant to what you're trying to do at stage one.
At this point, zero.
Right.
And if that was notified before our recommendation reports came out, we would have to take into account if there was a change of zoning proposed through that process.
Yes. Well, then it's probably, well, it's for the council to inform you of that, not me, because I'm not in the council, and I'm not, so I don't want to get anything wrong, but yes. So I've said enough, probably. All we can say, that's within our knowledge, is that Ziptrek has been consulted about that proposal, but that's all at this point. It's consultation, nothing's notified. So, sir, we come back to the fact that the rural zone seems to be delivering adequate opportunity and protection for this piece of land. I do have difficulties, as I say, being clear about whether the CTSZ, the Commercial Tourism Zone, has the benefit of all the rural zone provisions, or whether it is confined, and Mr. Denmark clarified, whether it's confined to those activities that are just listed in Table 11.
No, it's his position, and that in fact it is the rural zone rules with the modifications to of those provisions that he has added in there.
So it's rural plus.
Yes, and which is what a subzone effectively is, of course.
Well, it can be.
That, and to be fair, I haven't gone through it in detail, so I don't know how that works. But
yes, well, the commercial tourism and recreation subzone is not a rural zone. You couldn't call it a rural zone. I don't think, but you've got the opportunity for these various rural activities as well, and so there's quite a suite of activities going on there. Cafes, I mean, commercial activities is broad anyway. But anyway, sir, look, perhaps something Mr. Brown can speak to as well, but we've had some difficulty working out where the limits are, what the standards are. Noise, for example, I think there was a proposal for the noise limit in the resource consent to come over. I've seen it in evidence, but I don't see it in the provisions. And
it wasn't.
That was resisted.
That was a misunderstanding of Mr. Deans of my directions. It was the location of the helicopter landing pad rather than the noise controls applying to it, which I said could be dealt with at this stage.
And so on that, and apologies if I'm missing something obvious, I don't know where noise is managed in the site.
Well, managed under the noise provisions in Chapter 36.
Well, there's no cross-reference to Chapter 36 at the front here, 21.3. Oh, so, it's over the page. That's off there.
Good old.
I apologise. There you go. We've been looking at them before. I apologise there. So on that note, not quite the way I wanted to finish. I'll hand over to Mr. Brown to read his summary, and then I'll come to Mr. Year. Sorry, unless there are any other questions, sir.
Well, I'll just check. Mr. Brown, have you seen the material that Mr. Dent provided this morning?
No.
Are there spare copies of that?
Yeah. We were helpfully informed it would be up online at 3.
I've only got the one copy, unfortunately.
Would you like the opportunity to have a look at that version before you start, Mr. Brown? We'll give you 5 minutes.
Okay.
Why don't we adjourn and Mr. Yeo's...
Yes.
Oh, sorry, not adjourn. Give Mr. Brown an opportunity. Mr. Yeo can do his bit.
Well...
Or if you want to take a break.
We can afford 5 minutes. I'm not going to take that long.
Thank you, sir.
So we'll adjourn for 5 minutes. So, okay.